Tamimi, 13-year-old Palestinian activist, began recording, reporting on, and sharing her lived reality from the age of 7, shortly after two of her relatives were killed by Israeli forces. Jana now enjoys a global following, serves as ambassador of the South African Palestinian Children's Initiative, and has been awarded internationally for her media role. Again, that's Radiance of Resistance, A Night with Jana Jihad, on Monday, July 29th at 7 p.m. at the First Unitarian Church, 1226 Southwest Salmon Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm at the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Dime Roberts, stage and studio. Today I feature an excerpt from the one-hour documentary The Journey of Lady Buddha. It's a personal exploration of Kuan Yin, the Asian goddess of compassion and mercy. It features the voices of Dr. Chung Fang Yu and actors Elaine Lo, Yang Pham, Yu Qin Wong, and Ping Ka, with music by composer Stephen Hoyt. For more info on the full piece, visit the store at mediarights.org. And now, The Journey of Lady Buddha. '56, the year my Taiwanese mother and my American serviceman father met in Taiwan, there was a great typhoon. Flooding, devastation. Many people lost their homes and their lives. The people called out Guan Yin Fo Sa, the Taiwanese name for the great goddess. While the typhoon flooded the island, some American servicemen stationed in Taiwan took aerial photographs of the storm clouds. Then they returned to their base to develop the film. In the cloud formations, they could see the image of Guan Yin Fo Sa standing poised upon the head of a dragon. My mother gave me a painting based on this photograph. I didn't know the stories then, but the kind face staring back at me in the painting made me want to find out more about her.
Guan Yin, Guan Yin Fo Sa.
Growing up, I called her Lady Buddha. With hair piled up high, dressed in white, Lady Buddha. She sounded beautiful. I marveled that there was this Asian goddess that my mother worshipped, and the only stories that I knew came from Ma.
Guan Yin Fo Sa. You understand? Guan Yin Fo Sa.
I would try to spell that name phonetically. G-W-A-N-I-M-Posa. See, Ma speaks Taiwanese, and though I know a little Chinese that I studied in college, it hasn't made communicating very easy at all. It wasn't until recently, as I began to learn more about Lady Buddha, that I realized Guan Yin Fo Sa was actually Taiwanese for Guan Yin. Just a little revelation. But this research would be about a lot of revelations because the stories that my mother would try to tell me, I couldn't understand. I did so want to understand.
We talk the Chinese, you don't understand. Talk the Taiwanese, you don't understand.
It's safe to say that most parents and children have communication problems, but add to that language and cultural differences, it makes talking to each other even harder. As Ma felt the need for me to join her religion, it caused more tension between us. I just can't join a religion I didn't know much about. I mean, not that I even want to. But out of something akin to self-preservation, I decided to find out more about this goddess, this woman of many names.
Guan Shi Yi.
The one who hears the cries of the world.
Guan.
Look.
Shi.
World. Guan Yin has many faces.
Guan Yin, Guan Yin Fo Sa, Guan Nan Ka Nuo, Ling Ting Ren Men De Hu Huan.
The one who hears the cries of the world.
So in China, she is Guan Yin. In Taiwan, she is Guan Yin Fo Sa. In Vietnam, she is Guan Nam. In Japan, she is Canon. Whenever I describe Lady Buddha to my Asian girlfriends, they would tell me their own Guan Yin stories. They would tell me how their mothers kept the small statue in a corner shrine in the living room, how their mothers lit incense and candles, just like my mother, and said the name Guan Yin 3 times. Their mothers, like my mother, would pray and credit this female deity with all kinds of miracles, of how she saved them during childbirth or provided prosperity or luck or how she just made the family healthy and safe. Always it seemed as if Guanyin was passed on from mother to daughter.
My introduction to Guanyin, I think it started very, very early when I was very young. You know, I grew up with my mother's mother.
Dr. Chunfeng Yu is a professor of religion at Rutgers University.
My grandmother was a very devout worshiper of Guanyin, as many women in China still are. So she and I shared the same bedroom, and every morning, you know, the first thing she would do after she, you know, get up and get dressed and, you know, finished her personal toiletry was to light incense, you know, in front of the image of Guanyin. And she would tell me many different stories about Guanyin that she heard, you know, probably also from her mother.
I met Dr. Yu by chance. Someone had given me an article she had written about Guanyin. The article happened to have her email address. And that's how I've gathered a lot of information about Guanyin. Out of the blue, someone would send me articles. So I emailed Dr. Yu. As luck, or perhaps Guanyin would have it, Chunfeng Yu is not only a Buddhist from China, but she is one of the foremost scholars of Guanyin in this country. 15 years ago, she decided to write the quintessential book about the Goddess of Mercy. Her approach may be scholarly, but her inspiration is definitely personal.
I think the reason why I decided to study Buddhism may have something to do with my close ties with my grandmother and the simple but moving piety expressed, demonstrated by her. I feel that the presence of my grandmother and Guanyin, you know, around me, even though that she died, you know, when I was 18, I feel close to her. And somehow, through her, I have always felt very close to Guanyin.
The white-robed Guanyin holds a vase and a willow branch. The vase holds her compassion as she pours it out to the world. The willow branch, a symbol of Buddhist virtues, bends in the most ferocious winds and storms and springs back into shape again. The white-robed Guanyin is the most pure, most Madonna-like goddess image of Asia. She became widely popular around the same time as Madonna imagery in the Middle Ages. They say Guanyin has had 33 incarnations. Everyone's favorite story, says Dr. Yu, is about a princess.
Princess Miao Shan, or a princess wondrous goodness. You know, Miao means wonderful, wondrous, and Shan means goodness or virtue.
Your Guanyin of the limitless light has come to this land especially to save all sentient beings.
Dr. Yu says that in China, Princess Miao Shan is believed to be the embodiment of Guanyin, a symbol of gentleness and compassion, but also a woman who defies all in order to follow her own path.
You know, the prospect of getting married, living with in-laws, and very often suffer the ill humor of the mother's in-law, and also to bear children, you know, which sometimes could be, you know, very painful, if not fatal. I think a number of women didn't really look forward to getting married. So, you know, women became nuns, or, you know, not becoming nuns, you know, they remain single. I think they draw a lot of inspiration and encouragement, you know, from the example of Princess Miao Shan.
Princess Miao Shan was born on the 19th day of the second month and was the third daughter of a mythical king. She practiced Buddhism and refused to marry. This angered her father so that he imprisoned her in the imperial garden for many months. Then, when she still refused to marry, the king sent her to do hard labor under the bidding of nuns at a nunnery. When Miao Shan still refused her father's demands, the king ordered the nunnery burnt to the ground in an attempt to kill his daughter. But though fire killed the 500 nuns who lived there, Miao Shan was unharmed. Then her father, the king, sentenced her to die by strangulation, but a mountain spirit carried her away to the forest of corpses. While her strangled body lay lifeless in this world of the living, a bodhisattva took Miao Shan on a tour of all the hells of the earth. She spoke such beauty that all the beings imprisoned there were released and freed. the king of hells, fearing that there would be no more residents of his underworlds, took Miaoshan back to the world of the living. Upon waking, once more alive, she found herself in a province far away from her father's kingdom. She lived by herself for 9 years, perfecting herself, realizing her bodhisattva nature. There she lived until she heard that the king, her father, had become sick. Cursed by the gods for his treatment of Miaoshan, his whole body broke into sores. He was unable to sleep or rest. All the doctors of the kingdom were summoned, but none could find a cure for the disease. Miaoshan disguised herself as a monk, and as the king lay at death's door, she appeared at the palace. "I have a divine medicine that could cure your majesty," she told him. "What medicine would that be?" asked the king. "The only medicine that can cure you has to be made with the eyes and hands of one who is without hatred, one who is without anger." Miaoshan then gouged out her eyes and cut off her arms to make the medicine that would cure her father. The king indeed recovered from his illness after taking the medicine. He went to thank the pure one who cured him and saw that the eyeless and armless young woman was his own daughter, Miaoshan. "I am Miaoshan. Mindful of my father's love, I have repaid him with my eyes and arms," she said gently. The king fell to his knees and begged his daughter's forgiveness. He was so moved that he converted to Buddhism. He prayed and wished for his daughter to be restored. "I am so evil," cried the king, "that I have caused my daughter terrible suffering. Father, I have suffered no pain. Having given up these human eyes, I shall see with diamond eyes. Having yielded up these mortal arms, I shall receive golden arms. If my vow is true, all this will follow." Miaoshan transformed right before him into Guan Yin. Where there were no arms, there were 1,000 arms. Where there were no eyes, there were 1,000. Pure Guan Yin of the limitless light has come to this land especially to save all sentient beings. The king watched as she ascended to heaven as the goddess Guan Yin, radiating beauty like the harvest moon.
Princess Miaoshan started out as a rebel, says Dr. Yu, a heroine counter to the Confucian perspective of honoring one's parents.
But from the Buddhist perspective, she's a model Buddhist, you know, namely that if it is more important, you know, for you to try to practice religion, to search for enlightenment, you know, rather than conform to any secular, you know, standards of virtue. You know, yet through her enlightenment, you know, with the help of Buddhism, you know, she ended up as more filial than any filial children are capable of doing. And namely, you know, she's willing to sacrifice her eyes and hands or even her life, you know, for her love of her parent.
Where there were no arms, there were 1,000 arms. Where there were no eyes, there were 1,000.
If Princess Miaoshan could defy everyone to follow her own religious path, why can't I? My Southern Baptist grandmother used to close all her letters to me with, "Remember, Jesus Christ died for your sins so that you could have eternal life. Love, your grandmother." One of the things I truly regret is that I didn't see my grandmother in her final years because I was tired of the pressure she imposed on me to become baptized. It pained her that I would not join her in heaven. But I couldn't be a Christian, and I'm not a Buddhist. Something in me makes me unable to join any religion. This pains my mother. Ma can't understand why I just can't give in to Kuan Yin, just make the big sacrifice to her, like Princess Miao Shan did by cutting off her own flesh. And though I may not join Ma's religion, there's something in me that would do it if my mother's life really depended on it. Dr. Yu has a name for it.
Gegu. Yeah, that is a very unique Chinese practice. That is, you know, when the parents are deathly ill, you know, no normal medical recourses are of any help. So as a last resort, the son, the daughter, and very often the daughter-in-law, you know, would slice off one piece of flesh from the arm or from the thigh secretly, and then, you know, turn that, mix it with other ingredients, and cook it as a soup, you know, and feed to the dying parent or parent-in-law. Then patient immediately or miraculously would recover, you know, very much like the case of the king.
Good thing for me, Ma's life doesn't depend on Gogu.
White-robed Guan Yin.
Nanhai Guan Yin.
Guan Yin of the South Sea.
Lao Mu Guan Yin.
Guan Yin as an old woman.
Qian Shou Qian Yan Guan Yin.
Guan Yin of a thousand hands and a thousand eyes.
Guan Shi Yin.
The one who hears the cries of the world.
If we want to find a kind of central theme, you know, of all the stories, you know, would be that, you know, Guan Yin is always near us, and Guan Yin is always ready to help us. And in order to help us, the Guan Yin, you know, would take on any form in order to be of assistance to us.
All the stories about Guan Yin have a ready to help us at any time. I love that. And she takes on any form to aid us. She could be a princess, an elder woman, or in this case, a stranger in town who would end up as Mr. Ma's wife.
During the Tang Dynasty, there was a village that did not believe in Guan Yin or any Buddhism. The people of the village would rather fight and hunt than study the chapters of the sutras. Into this village one day came a beautiful young woman, and all the eligible men wanted to marry her, but she was a very choosy young woman. One day, in order to put a stop to all the marriage proposals that came her way, she told everyone that she would marry any man who could memorize a chapter of the Lotus Sutra in one night.
这位姑娘告诉他们, 谁能在一夜之间背会荷花经一首, 她就嫁给谁。
The next morning, 20 men passed the test. So, she asked the man to memorize the Diamond Sutra that night.
这位姑娘又告诉他们, 回去背金刚经一首。
The next morning, she greeted 10 men with even more eager smiles than the day before. I'll have to come up with something even more challenging, she said. So, she told the men to memorize the entire book of the Lotus Sutra in 3 days.
我不得不提出更难的条件来考验他们。 这位姑娘又让他们回去，在三天内把全套的《荷花经》背下来。This
time, only Mr. Ma succeeded. Quickly, he made wedding plans and arranged a great feast for the entire village. They were married at Mr. Ma's house. But just as the wedding guests departed, the woman fell ill. A few hours later, she died. Her body began to decompose very soon afterward, so she was buried in a hurry. Several days later, an old monk came to see Mr. Ma and asked to be shown to his wife's tomb. The monk saw that the flesh had already disintegrated from Mr. Ma's wife. All that was left were her bones linked together by a gold chain. That was the sign of a holy person. The monk told the onlookers that she was the goddess Guan Yin, who had come to save them from their karma. After washing her bones in holy water, the monk gently held them as he ascended into the sky.
Goddess of mercy, goddess of compassion. These are not just simple fables. The stories are mythology carried word of mouth from generation to generation. And the overlying message is that Guan Yin is everywhere with you when you least expect her, in any form. Compassion and mercy appearing at any time. How can you argue with that?
In order to understand why Guan Yin in China, you know, assumes so many disguises, you know, or so many incarnations, I think we have to know something about, you know, the nature of Chinese religion. In Chinese religion, you know, there's, unlike Western religion, there's no sharp gap, you know, between God and humanity. Namely, gods are better, are more powerful, more spiritual than human beings. So human beings, if they're really good, they often can turn into gods.
There is a story about an old woman who came to a village one day. It was a hot day, and the villagers were very crabby. She was carrying a fish basket, this old woman, and trying to sell fish to the crabby villagers. They would buy none.
"Go away, old woman,"
they yell at her. "You and your fish stink." Very rude people. It was hot, but there's no excuse for rudeness. So the old woman was very disheartened. "Will no one take pity on an old woman?" she cried. And out of the crowd, one kind man came to her and took her hand. "I will buy the entire basket, Lao Mu," he said. That's a respectful Chinese term for revered elder woman. Then the kind man gave her several coins, more than the basket of fish were worth. Smiling, the old woman said, "You may keep your money." Then, in a radiant light, she became Guan Yin. You see, it was her all that time. Guan Yin, white-robed and beautiful, said to the kind man, "Your compassion and generosity will be returned to you all the days of your life." And with that, she disappeared. The rest of the villagers just stood there with their mouths hanging open. Flies could have buzzed in and out in the time it took for them to realize what had happened. You can be sure they never treated an old woman with disrespect again, and each other too. For who knows when there's a Guan Yin just waiting to burst out of someone. It could be you, or you, or me. Holy Guan Yin.
There were once upon a time real human beings, you know, real men and real women. But because of this extraordinary goodness, they became gods. Now, when Buddhism was introduced into China, Guan Yin actually was originally a Buddhist, a non-Chinese, an Indian deity. Now, in fact, you know, Guan Yin was and is not, you know, depicted as feminine, as a goddess at all in South Asia.
Amitofa. Ma and I once climbed to the top of a white temple in Taiwan. The rock steps seemed to go up for a mile or so. We followed the sounds of 100 voices singing Amitofa. I didn't know then that it was a salutation to Amitabha Buddha, a father or mother of Avalokiteshvara, who would travel to China to become Guan Yin.
Avalokiteshvara, the Lord who regards the cries of the world.
Guan Yin, many faces and many stories.
Avalokiteshvara was dwelling in the pure land of Amitabha Buddha, where everything was peaceful. One day, he decided to descend to Tibet to help the land become more civilized and nonviolent. He vowed to Amitabha Buddha, "If I should ever get discouraged down there, may my body be shattered into 1,000 pieces. Then he descended into the mountains, and for several lifetimes, he meditated upon boundless compassion, continually emanating waves of love. But during that time, the people of Tibet were powerful warriors who had conquered much of Central Asia. After many lifetimes, Avalokiteshvara still had not calmed their ways. Somehow, violence still persisted. He thought to himself, "These evil, violent Tibetans are insatiable. No matter how peaceful and loving I am, it has no effect." And Avalokiteshvara became discouraged and wept 2 tears, one white, one green. From the tears, 2 goddesses were formed. The 2 goddesses said to him, "Stop weeping, we'll help you." And indeed, they calmed him for a time. But he continued to be discouraged, and in that moment, his body was instantly shattered into 1,000 pieces. Amitabha Buddha came to Avalokiteshvara, where he was thrown in pieces about the mountain. He said, "That was a very ambitious vow you made. You must be careful what you wish for, because whatever it is, good or bad, sooner or later you will get it." So the Amitabha Buddha blessed Avalokiteshvara, and 1,000 pieces came together to form an imposing figure of 11 heads, 1,000 arms, and 1,000 eyes.
This god became a goddess. Evolution? Or just filling a need? Another voice, a female voice. The one who hears the cries of the world. Guanyin Posa.
Guanyin Posa. Do you understand? Guanyin Posa. That's the whole name, Guanyin Posa. We talk the Chinese, you don't understand. Talk the Taiwanese, you don't understand. It's called Miao Shan Gong Zi. You understand Miao Shan Gong Zi?
Miao Shan Gong Zi. Miao Shan Gong Zi. Princess Miao Shan. She was trying to tell me about Princess Miao Shan, the embodiment of Guan Yin. Guan Yin Posa. And now I understand. After nearly a decade, I understand.
You just heard a short version of the one-hour documentary, The Journey of Lady Buddha, featuring the voices of Dr. Chung Fang Yu and actors Elaine Low, Yang Pham, Yu Chin Wong, and Ping Ka, with music by composer Stephen Hoyt. Order the full documentary by visiting the store at mediarites.org, mediarites.org. Thanks for listening. I'm Dime Roberts.
You're listening to KBOO Portland. Coming up at 11:30, we have Art Focus. Joseph Gallivan interviews M.K. Guth about the state of art in Portland and the art infrastructure of funding, grants, programming, and studio space. KBOO programming is made possible by KBOO member listeners and support from the Clinton Street Theater, open since 1915, featuring independent films, parties, and community events.
located at 2522 Southeast Clinton Street in Portland. Full event schedule, tickets, showtimes, and more information online at cstpdx.com.
Like the KBOO Community Radio Facebook page. Find KBOO Community Radio on Facebook and like our page, and have events, ticket giveaways, and great information delivered directly to your personal feed. One out of every seven humans is on Facebook, so using Facebook to share KBOO with your friends and family has never been easier. Like KBOO on Facebook today.
My name is Joseph Gallivan. You're listening to Art Focus on KBOO Portland. My guest this week is M.K. Guth. She is the director of the Hallie Ford School of Graduate Studies at PNCA and an interdisciplinary artist showing at the Elizabeth Leach and Kristin Turney Galleries. Thanks for coming into KBOO again.
Thanks for having me.
So you're an interdisciplinary artist. What are you up to these days?
Well, besides being the director of the graduate school at PNCA, I have a few projects coming up. I have a solo exhibition at the Kristin Turney Gallery in New York, which opens in September. And that will be more object-based and print-based. And then in next May, I have a project with the UCLA Performance Schedule called Choreography for Reading Aloud, Knowing an Author. And that will be a performance similar to something I did here in town at Reed for Converge 45 a couple years ago. And I also did a similar project at Canada Gallery in New York a few years ago. But the one that's going to be in UCLA will all be around the works of Susan Sontag. UCLA just acquired the Susan Sontag archive. So there'll be 50 to 60 performers reading her journals, her works, her correspondences, the works of the thinker.